I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, you're listening to the Guitar Nerds Podcast, the world's number one guitar podcast. Wherever you're listening to us, whatever you're doing, on your commute, in a car, a train, or a bus, even walking, at home, in the office, or if you've just popped your earplugs in because you missed the sound of Jay's sweet soft voice, we hope you're enjoying our little foray into the world of guitars. And remember, if you want more, patreon.com/guitarnerds. Thank you, and enjoy this week's episode. Ciao. Welcome to the Guitar Nerds Podcast, the world's number one guitar podcast. I am your host, Joe Branton, joined this week by Mark Packham.
Upside down and twice on Sunday.
Jay Cross.
Hello.
And Matthew Knight.
I like ice cream.
Fantastic. And this week, we're going to be covering a load of stuff. We're going to be taking a look in our mailbag at some of the things we've been working with.
I'm not
sorry,
sure that's
but
where
every
the
week for the
on
last
those
few weeks,
are.
I've just laughed at mailbag because I've just, in fact, I'm going to mistype it on our notes right now. I just find it hilarious.
Wonderful, great. Okay,
we should call it something different. You wouldn't call it? Would you call it a mailbag in the post office in the UK?
No, I mean, I think if I'd have had the choice, I'd have turned it
postal sack.
Yeah. Yeah, Mark named it, didn't he?
Well, I was in Sweden the other day, sure. And they couldn't get their head around the term mail order. They were like, "That doesn't make any sense."
Well, they used to translation.
They were like, "Mail order makes no sense. Why would you order mail?"
You order and then mail comes.
What do they call it?
Well, no, it used to be that you would mail in your order.
Yeah,
that's why it's mail order. You would fill out a form that was in the back of a magazine or whatever. And that's how you'd place your order, in the mail. So it makes sense.
Yeah.
Please tell us more about what happens in guitar shops in 1998.
Sure, I mean, you know, that's when I've worked in the business a long time. Industry veteran, I think, is the that's what I need to start calling myself.
Here's another one for
you. Mark, how did life change when Boss introduced the first guitar pedal? How did life change?
What year was that, Matty? The
TU2?
The first one that Mark paid attention to.
But what was it? 96, 98?
97.
Yeah, I wasn't quite in the shops by then, but... The
TU2 was the catalyst that boosted the guitar industry to a point where Mark Packham was able to bring it in, yeah.
And it's more just that I was 13 in 1997, so...
I'd really tried to do a clean intro here. I was gonna my plan was for new listeners for people.
Joe, we don't even have any old listeners, let alone new listeners.
My plan was to sort of for people who haven't listened before to maybe explain what the podcast was for just the first 30 seconds.
What do you mean?
Nobody listens to this. We're 2/3 of the way through the football season at the moment, and this year I've been really into fantasy football. I've been into it a lot over the last few years, but this year I'm really into it. And most of the team, there's 5 million teams in the game, and a lot of them are dead teams because people have just given up. And that's, I think, what happens with most of the people listening to it. It's just people downloaded it at one point or another, and it's just downloading all the time. No one's listening.
We're talking to ourselves. I'm trying to get into baseball at the moment. I'm picking a team.
You should go with the Philadelphia Phillies.
Yes, that's what Maddie said to me. But
they just signed Bryce Harper, who is the Cristiano Ronaldo of the baseballs.
That sounds awful.
Yeah,
I just in terms of he's the big name.
I think I'm going to go for the New York Mets.
What are you doing the Mets for?
Who does Michael Jackson play for? Not Michael Jackson, Michael Jordan.
Probably not a good time to bring that up.
One of the Michaels.
Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
I think that's what you meant, wasn't it? Yeah, he... Chicago Bulls, mate.
No, he was a baseball player for a bit.
No, he wasn't.
Yeah, he was.
Oh, yeah, he was afterwards. He was afterwards. Good Lord.
Oh, mate, you need to get some sleep.
I tell you what, we definitely don't have any listeners anymore. Bloody hell.
Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds podcast, the world's number one
The world's number two guitar podcast, I would have thought by now.
Okay, anyway, so moving on to some guitar topics very, very quickly. Matt, you're just back from Sweden, where you went for something like a week to go round loads of
a week?
I don't know.
A week?
Well, it was a week.
I went for 40 hours.
Oh, right.
How many?
I literally landed, went to 5 guitar shops, had 2 meetings and left.
You went to 5? So that was my question. You went to 5 guitar shops.
Yes, I did. I went to Deluxe Music, some 4 Sound stores. 4 Sound, like some crazy massive chain of guitar stores in Sweden. Or in Scandinavia, they have 35 stores. But much more spread out than they would be in England, because the whole of Scandinavia is massive and obviously covers several countries. But I went to a really cool new store in Stockholm called These Go to 11, which is a pedal-only guitar store. And they did things exactly the way that I would do a store if I was going to open a guitar store, which was have lots of pedals laid out by effects type rather than by brand, which made so much more sense. And then just have a few cool amps for people to play out on and a few cool guitars as well. But they did a load of cool boutique stuff. They had some really cool spring tanks from a company called Surfy Bear that were basically like full-size spring tanks for your guitar amp, which I guess in a way they've probably gone, oh, now that... Anasound have got these ones that like mount to your pedal board. It sort of makes ours a little bit redundant, really.
And what was the brand name?
Surfy Bear.
And I've not heard of Surfy Bear before. What was their country of origin? Like, were there any Scandinavian pedals that we're not sort of seeing over in sort of the UK or the US market?
There was one company, and I forgot the name, that were literally making attenuators. But most of the stuff in there was stuff that you already see, but it was just so cool to see them all as the main focal point of a shop rather than the cabinet in the corner and then a whole bunch of guitars and amps. It was like wall-to-wall, custom-designed glass cabinets with everything laid out by effect type. So it was like, oh, you want to have a look at reverb? Here's a whole cabinet just full of reverb pedals.
That's great.
So it wasn't just like, here's all the Chase Bliss pedals, here's all the Boss pedals, here's all the, you know, Dan Electro pedals, whatever. It was, everything was laid out by type. So it's like, right, I'm looking for a fuzz pedal. Okay, here's 100 fuzz pedals.
That's really cool. And I do find, like, in a normal guitar shop, often pedals, whilst the guitar, I mean, I'm pretty much just speaking about GAC here, but whilst GAC sells every, you know, loads of brands, you only get a handful of actually on display pedals. And pedals tend to be, in most guitar shops, sort of shoved away in the corner. It's really cool that you've got somewhere where everything's just all there to try.
It was like that when I... Go on, sorry, Matty.
I was going to say, they also had an entire wall of barefoot buttons. Like, I think about 60 different barefoot buttons.
How
I was
weird.
Like, wow, usually you'd have like... they had a tiny string display and then just loads of barefoot buttons and then just a bunch of cables. And the way they demoed all the pedals as well, to keep them nice and neat off the floor, they'd made these like custom little demo boxes that kind of went on the floor that stopped them from actually like going around on their wooden floor. So they like put them in their own little basket and then like plugged them in.
Weird.
It was kind of weird, but it was just like a nice store. They had a few guitars in there and they did have a few amps, but like real high-end amps. They were like, right, if you want, and they were all pedal platform amps. It wasn't like, here's this like 3-channel 150 watt diesel. It's like, here's this 1-channel single volume like Mad Professor amp that does nothing but take pedals.
So just doing a bit of reading on Surfy Industries, which is the company that makes the Surfy Bear. They do four products. So they do the Surfy Vibe pedal. Well, they do a few different products actually, but just in the stuff that's pre-built. They do Surfy Vibe, which is a pedal, the Surfy Trem, which is a pedal. Then they do...
What sort of pedals are they?
Well, they're Vibe and Trem.
Oh, okay.
And then they do two different versions of the Surfy Bear reverb tank. The first one being Metal, which is a metal box that goes on the floor that's just got an on-off volume tone, mixer, and dwell controls. And they then also do the Surfy Bear as the Reverb Tank Classic, which is the same thing, box that goes on the floor, but you only get three controls, tone, mixer, and dwell. And it's Tolexed. So it looks
like
a Tolex pedal.
It looks like looking at the top of like a Blues Junior or something. It's got like Fender controls, but they do a few different options. You get blonde Tolex, brown Tolex, or black Tolex.
That's what I like. That is great. That sounds awesome. What was that pedal company that made the pedals look like the volume control bits on a Strat?
Oh yeah, I can't remember what they were called. But
Copper Sound.
Yeah, it was Copper Sound, wasn't it?
Oh. This is the Strat and the Tele one.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
The Surfy Industries website is really good. Surfyindustries.com. If you go on there to the Surfy Bear, it shows you basically exactly what it is. It's just a big reverb tank, shows you the springs. It looks neat.
I tell you what I like about the Surfy Bear over the other one, the Classic, is you've got, as well as having the controls and the foot switch on the unit, you've also got the option to put another foot switch in. So presumably, if you don't want to have this on the floor, if you just want to have it on top of your ramp and then have a single button foot switch,
that's cool.
That leads to it, so you have that. I assume that's what that's for. That would make sense to me.
It's weird that that's not on the Classic. So you think the Classics would be more suited sitting on top of the amp?
I also think that the Classic is probably, you know, a shower, and this one here is a goer.
Right, cool. I like it. Is that going to be like our new sort of make gooder thing?
What?
A shower or a goer?
No.
Oh, okay.
No.
No.
It's like form or function.
Yeah, shower, I mean, we're definitely... Wait, which one do we like? I don't think we like either, do we?
I like a goer.
It depends if it's Shell Pink or not, to be honest.
That's true, yeah. I mean, it doesn't really matter, let's be honest.
I like a pink goer.
So this weekend, I was... I went to a studio all weekend with my band, and... a bottle of whiskey and a bottle of coffee tequila. So the
coffee tequila.
Yes, it's lovely. Oh, it's wonderful. But the Sunday was not very productive. But we were trying to write this new 20-minute single. But we took loads of gear. And anyway, as in equipment with us. We took loads of equipment with us. Is what I mean. He
set himself up for his own joke.
I know. As soon as he said we took loads of gear and then looked up at us and neither Mark or I were like.
No, I did not.
That we were both rolling our eyes and he was like, I'm going to have to go. In fact, he actually did all of that and then edited it out.
Yeah. Great.
That's what happened.
Anyway. We bought loads of equipment, but the
gear. Oh, you're so
So we were trying for the first time to use a completely Helix based setup, but I was trying to do it a little bit differently. So I was setting up stuff for our guitarist who's using two katanas, but what we did was run the normal quarter inch jack out from the Helix into the effects return on the katana, which of course you can do, turning the katana into just a power amp and then just not choosing a cab setting from the Helix, but choosing just an amp head setting. But you can also create a second path on the Helix, and then I found if I assigned the out on the second path to the send on the Helix, then you turn the send into a normal output. So I could then apply an amp to that and send the send to the effects return on the second katana.
Oh, okay.
Which was great. So I could set him up so he had two amps, but I could turn his katanas into, and what we ended up doing was turning his two katanas into an AC30 and a Plexi.
Okay.
And giving him sort of a dual rig from that. So it was like a clean and a drive amp. And then you know you can assign a foot switch to permanently ABY on that second amp, and apply like drives to the amp. But now, of course, because, which is what he would do conventionally with a normal ABY, but because you've now got the Helix and you've got that second path, I can say, well, when he's on this clean sound, I don't just want the second amplifier to be off, which it would normally be if it's not a big drive sound. I can now say, well, let's turn that second amp into a jazz chorus, and we'll, you know, we'll pop a load of vibrato or a Leslie on the front end of that. Or we were doing things like making the second amp a completely wet, like, reverb amp, and then making the foot switch a volume pedal for it, so he can play normally on the top and then just swell in this sort of ambient verb completely cleanly on the second amp. But man, I had a lot of fun. It was really, really good.
How much songwriting did you get done?
We did a lot, to be honest.
We spent 8 hours setting up the pedals. And, you know, there was no time for songwriting.
We had spent the weekend before messing around with the Helix as well. But one thing we did find is that because there is so much to the Helix, actually when it came to recording, we switched back to his normal pedal board. because we couldn't, out of the box, make the Helix sound as good as a pair of Katanas and a full-tone OCD.
I love it. You just went for two. Two basic amps.
But
and
I'm sure you can.
A drive pedal.
I'm sure we can make that Helix sound
Matt in
great.
The background.
I'm sure we can make that Helix sound great, but we couldn't in the time restraints of, like, having to actually play some music. You know, it's the sort of thing. It was like, and at that point, and it's really raised a question for me, because I'm so excited about, now I kind of understand the Helix, I'm so excited about all the options, all the doors it opens, all the different things I can do with that Helix. But at the same time, if it's taking me, you know, what, and it's like, well, we can make the Helix sound good, we've just got to work out what drives and amps we blend together and EQ parameters we set up to make the Helix sound as good as £200 amplifiers.
So how come you were going out of the send on the Helix rather than the second amp out?
Because I wouldn't be able to treat that independently. So on the Helix, I can only...
Not split the outputs?
Maybe. I couldn't work out how to. So when you...
GT1000, mate.
When you're selecting where you're sending the output, you're only presented with the left and right as, like, it's, are you sending them to the left and right? Or are you sending it somewhere else? Yeah. So it wasn't like I didn't have a choice. So I had to. I'm sure you probably can. It's just I thought it was much easier.
You must be able. That would be crazy if you couldn't.
I'm sure you can. I'm sure you can pan them. In fact, I've seen a couple of videos of other people setting up a hard pan. But I just thought I thought it was easier rather than setting up this extra, because you set up a pan, it's like adding an extra pedal, you know, to it. And I was like, oh, or I can just send it to this, like, I didn't need the send on the Helix for anything, and it was a bit more convenient to set it up that way.
Yes, I was watching a video this morning with the guitarist Josh Smith, who was talking about his new pedal board, where he's using an HX Stomp in conjunction with his Eventide H9.
All right.
Because it's all MIDI, he's only using it for effects, so he's using it like an M5.
Right.
But obviously you can run 6 effects blocks on the HX Stomps at once.
You just can't select them live. That's my only problem with the Stomp. Like, you can't flick around. You'd need to use your hand to change sounds.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess if you're just setting presets up, perhaps just switching in presets via a MIDI PC message might be okay. But I guess that's the thing with all of these. Like, for me, and I guess for you guys... with a guitar, you kind of really just want the effects mainly.
Yeah, I mean, well, I guess that certainly is true. I could just run into the front end. We may well, you know, just run into the front end of the guitars. What was so appealing and what I really loved and what really excited me about it was the, you know, being able to say, well, especially with this, with Tim running 2 amps, I was like, well, at this point, you know, we can have 2 orange AD30s going, and then for this next section of the song, I'm literally going to change it to an AC15 and a, you know, a and Marshall JCM. I love that. I love
but
that.
But in the end,
you
just went back for two katanas
but
and an OCD.
The thing, and there was the thing, and I'm always trying to be like, the good thing about Tim is he knows nothing about equipment. And of course, I'm always, always going to pick something based on the prestige of that piece of gear. I can't help but get suckered in by that. So it was really good to have him as a leveler, because I'm sort of being like, yeah, this is fantastic. And when it came to the recording, Tim was like, I'm going to get my old pedal board out and just plug that in because it sounds better. And he's very much like, I'm sure we can get something. But then since then, I've been thinking like, man, you know, is that good enough? Should you be hunting for something? And actually, I'm not even suggesting that the Helix is a bad piece of equipment. I'm saying it's a very clean piece of equipment. But and for sort of always sloppy, rocky bands, I just don't know if it, I don't know if it does that.
Is he only using the one channel on the Katana? Would it not make sense to run it like 4-cable method or 8-cable method? So run 2 Katanas, 2 effects loops, and then you can
you've lost
different effects.
I love that. You're giving it the big one about, yeah, I spent all this time doing it. As soon as Matt mentions an alternative method, you're like, I don't get it.
Explain what you're talking about.
So 4-cable method, where you effectively insert the amp's preamp into the Helix. So it becomes like an effects block.
Right.
So you can run stuff into the front of the amp, or you can run stuff after the amp's preamp.
Yeah.
So if he's using the gain channels on the Katana, then you can still run delays and reverbs without them getting really messy.
Right.
But because the Helix has two sets of stereo effects loops, you can effectively run the 4-cable method twice, one on each amp. So you can still have super clean delays and stuff if you're using high gain settings on the Katana, but then you can also use all your other effects in the front end as well.
Yeah,
I mean, it's a much more complicated setup. Well, but it's the kind of thing that like Rabia would do in like,
yeah, and,
Tosca,
well, and actually like that would be the fundamental difference between sort of Tosca's version of prog and ours, is that his is very clean and precise and computery, and ours is very 70s and old.
Giving it the big one. Oh, we're actually doing... ours is some more vintage style, actually. More vintage style of using... prog.
So, anyway...
Using 2 Katanas.
Yeah, I know. But, you know, we're trying to make it sound old at least. Anyway, I was like, yeah, I'm going to do the same thing. So I brought the HX FX for bass.
Ended up playing through 2 Katanas and a Boss ODB3.
I couldn't find a drive on the HX FX that really worked on bass, that didn't like just cut out a load of my low end. Couldn't find anything on there. So I ended up just using an electric Mistress.
Wait.
For drive.
Yeah.
For drive.
Because you can drive the old ones. The guy whose studio it was had one of them. So I just had like a really flangy drive sound and it was absolutely awesome. So now all I want is an electric Mistress. Well, here's the thing. So I had two. He had a newer one and an old one. So I had a newer one on all the time. Just like...
Which is a standard like Neo electric Mistress.
I don't think it was Neo.
It was like one of the big box ones.
The big ones. So one of the 2000s reissue ones.
Right, okay.
Yeah. So I had one of those on really low. So it was just like a bit of like warbly tape sort of thing, which now I never want to turn off. I always want flanger on everything. So my clean sound was flanger. And then my drive
sound
was drivey flanger. We've been saying that
since the Deco came out, that it's like that kind of like warble tape sound.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is like...
It's just the electric Mistress sounds better.
Than a Deco?
Well, the Deco probably sounds pretty good.
I mean,
but when's it going to end?
Like, because we talked about that when it came out, using it as a delay, as a drive pedal.
As a drive pedal, just as
a make gooder, which is essentially what you're using the electric Mistress
for. But now all I care about is flanger.
Right. Okay. Good.
Is the best effect.
Okay. Good.
I've never heard anyone else ever say that, particularly bass players.
Yeah.
No one's ever gone essential effect for bass, flanger.
That's what I need, really accentuates that, you know, flanger, that effect that's well known for its rumbling lows, you know.
Really need that flanger.
Anyway, we should move on and see what is in the Guitar Nerd's big hairy mailbag.
Mailbag.
That's disgusting.
Yeah, I know.
Don't ever do that again.
I'm sorry. Okay, so first of all...
I was talking about the jingle.
Oh, right. I see. I'm sorry. I do apologise. I'll adjust it. I'll cut out the version that you did where you sang it last week.
Mailbag.
No, he went. He did sort of like a mailbag, mailbag. But I'm gonna.
Did I?
Yeah,
I don't remember that.
No, I do. I edited it.
Oh, good.
I'm trying to make a little cuts of all my favorite
can you,
things.
Can you put it through like superior auto-tune? So it's like
I can.
Well, well.
I absolutely can do that. Anyway, first up, we spoke about them. We spoke about them a couple of weeks ago, and I think we did mention last week that we got a load of stuff sent through. So we're going to go through the things that we've had. So Hot Tone and also Valaton. Valaton.
Yes, Valaton. Valaton. Let's go with Valaton.
Valaton. No, Valaton.
I prefer Valaton.
Okay. Well, we'll go with that. Anyway, they sent us a handful of things, and we've checked them out. We brought some over to Jay's last week, so we all had a listen, for Matt.
I'm sure we talked about them a bit last week.
We did.
Because we talked about not being able to properly try the Ampero, and we talked about the MDR last week. Because those are the ones that we tried last week.
Actually, we left the MDR. We said that we would we'd talk about it with everything else.
Oh, okay, just, fine.
We didn't really go into any details on what it had on there. We talked about it loads before the podcast, but the actual recording we didn't go into. So, first of all, the Hot Tone, the Ampero.
I took that home last week.
You took that home. So I had a bit of
test.
We all had a bit of a look at it last week, but you've had some time on it. And I also did the week before.
So the key thing was last week that we didn't have enough time to basically turn the amp models off. And none of us wanted to sit here with the others in the room with headphones on listening to it.
Because we were running it into the front of Jay's Princeton.
And it sounded bad because obviously it had the amp modeling on and none of us could be bothered to figure out how to do it. So I took it home and spent some time with it yesterday on headphones. And I was pleasantly surprised, I have to admit. The drives sound good, which is always my problem with cheap MOE. Well, not cheap MOE effects. This is, what, £350?
Yeah.
Like that. And for those who don't know, it's kind of going after a Helix-y, you know, GT1000 kind
it's
of...
It's very well presented.
Yeah, it's great. We did talk about it a bit last week. It's fully touchscreen, it's colour screen, so it's all very, very clear as to what's going on. Very easy to edit patches, more so, I would say, than some of the other things I've tried in the same realm. The amps sound great. The amps sound really good. The different amps, different cabs. I was pleasantly surprised by how well they drive. One thing that I didn't like, I didn't like the drive pedals that were in there particularly.
Right.
Didn't think a lot of them sounded particularly convincing.
They tend to be multi-effects, and this applies to sort of Helix and Headrush and everything else. They always tend to be very hot, all the drives. Like, there's never anything traditional or transparent.
Yeah, but you could kind of get that from the amp models that were in there, and that's how I ended up using it. When I was using it yesterday, I just didn't have any drive pedals on. I was getting the drive just from the amp model. One thing that was surprising is that I didn't think the modulations were great, which is something that I normally don't have a problem with on multi-effect stuff because they're usually fine. It's normally only drives where they fall down.
Yeah.
But there's lots to shout about in terms of stuff that's good. The delays and reverb sound really nice. You can go crazy. You can do shimmery stuff. You can do mad atmospheric things. The ease of editing, like I said, is fantastic. The overall kind of package, you know, like it's metal box. Firstly, the display is good, but also all the pedals light up themselves. All the switches light up. And
they're coloured as well.
They are, yeah.
So you have different sort of...
Exactly that. So you know what type of effect you're turning on and off. Overall, I think for £350, you know, it's tiny. If you wanted something that you could put into a gig bag and get... basically everything that a Helix or you know, the GT1000 does, but certainly not to that standard, and you wanted something you could just slip into the front pocket of a gig bag, it's a very good option. But there are certainly some shortcomings when it comes to some of the effects.
Right.
The amp models, like I said, sounded great. So if you want something just to go straight into a PA, if your amp fails, and you want it to do a few other things as well, it's ideal. Great little product.
Has it got XLR outs or is it just...
I don't know. Joe's got it right there. I can't remember whether it's got XLR outs or not, or whether it's just jack.
Yes, there's XLR outs.
He says yes, there's XLR.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so you've got left and right XLR, left and right jack. One thing that did annoy me is only a mini jack for the headphones, which I always find annoying.
What's wrong with that?
Well, really? Just...
All the headphones that we're using right now are mini jack.
These aren't.
Oh.
These are actually good headphones, that's why. So studio quality headphones generally have the large jack. the quarter inch. So I was expecting the Ampero to have that, and it did not.
Did you have any headphones that you
I just found an adapter. It was fine. Not too much of a problem. Right. But
you were okay.
It was fine. Right, but overall, great little product. And yeah, excited to see what they do next. It, you know, if they were to do something bigger, might be interesting.
Yeah, because that's certainly what Moore have done, isn't it? When they've moved to the GE300,
I think it is,
Yeah, certainly what Moore's done. It'd be interesting to see, because that is the one thing that I dislike about these smaller, these compact versions of these sort of complete amp and effects solutions, is if you're just banking. I'd rather be able to like select a patch rather than just constantly bank.
Yes. Yeah. One thing that it did make me think of was like how much you're getting for the £350. You know, like back in the day, remember when you'd get like a Zoom GFX6 or whatever?
Yeah.
And that would be like £350 and it would sound pretty bad, to be honest. That's the thing. You know, there's so much competition in this space, but, you know, think how far we've moved on from that. And if you're thinking like, oh, I'd never get a multi-effects because multi-effects sound bad, they kind of don't anymore, and you don't have to spend mega money. They sound really good. And that's even more evident in the other stuff that we're going to talk about right now, I think.
Yeah.
I think that's the thing, isn't it? The sounds have got way better because processing has got way better.
Well, and just cheaper
DSP
as well.
Coding. Yeah. It's just more what the interaction's like and how they feel, really, isn't it? Because, you know, Kemper has proven that you can get a great sound all digital. I think what's becoming more difficult is the blurred line between what £350 gets you and like £1,500.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. And also on the other end, you know, I don't want to jump ahead too much, but we also got this stuff from Valeton.
Yeah. And some of the stuff is doing a pretty similar job.
Well, yeah. So the one that stood out for me is the one that we tried today, which is the Valeton Dapper Indie.
Yes.
So the Dapper is their like fly rig range, and the Indie, as the name suggests, is built for kind of indie guitarists, as it were. So the Dapper range, basically you get different kind of flavors of fly rig, and on the Indie you have got Indie Drive, Fuzz Wall, Liquid Effects, Echoes and Ambient. So what that effectively works out as is like Indie Drive is almost like a kind of transparently overdrive. Like,
yeah, we found it was quite, I thought it worked really nicely at low levels of gain.
Definitely, definitely. Fuzz Wall, which is a fuzz, obviously.
Great, super like traddy, sort of Hendrix-y.
Yeah, but you could really like push it as well. And then, so Liquid Effects is your modulation. So you've got Chorus Flanger Tremolo to switch between.
Phaser and Tremolo.
Sorry, Chorus Phaser and Tremolo, which you can switch between.
Liked the Tremolo. The Tremolo was especially good.
Tremolo sounded really good. Echoes, you've got Analog Echo, Tape Delay or Reverse.
Which is cool. That's like a nice weird mix. It's so often people are like, here's digital, here's analog.
And then on the Ambient side, that's your Reverb. So you've got Room, Hall and Plate.
Although they get quite crazy. Room, Hall and Plate sounds like they're going to be normal, but there's loads of scope. Now, when I was reading the write-up of this pedal, because I got really the wrong end of the stick. When people say indie, I think of, you know, the Kooks and that, but they mean like shoegazy, because the idea of this is that it's got, you know, it's got loads of scope to make weird, heavily modulated, very delay-heavy and reverb-y, you know, fuzz tones. It's great. It's amazing, like the amount of weirdness you can get out of this relatively functional.
I think the only thing it's missing is an external in out halfway through after the fuzz. Just because if someone's got one and there's just one particular pedal you can't live without, you can't insert it after the drives or before the.
I think you would just have to put it at the end.
True.
Like,
but these are so designed to be fly rigs, aren't they?
It's like two jacks. Do you know what I mean?
But these things are not a huge amount of money. They're £129. So
it's ridiculously cheap for a complete solution. And there's quite a lot. Like you see fly rigs. Fly rigs generally consist of like 3 to 4 effects.
Yeah.
I mean, I appreciate this is only one more, but it's still this is every effect.
I want to try the Dapper Dark, which is the metal version.
You definitely don't.
Boost, high gain drive. Have you tried it?
No, of course I haven't.
So it's got boost, high gain drive, chorus and delay. So it's basically, Matty, what was that? What's the boss pedal that's got the chorus and delay, the metal one? Digital Metalizer?
Oh, the Digital Metalizer.
Yeah.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Basically, classic. The digital metalizer, but with 5 on-off switches instead.
Well, I tell you what, Matt. As you know, you were saying that what if you have that one pedal you can't live without? That one pedal is probably going to be like a really good drive, and that's where Valentin have also got you covered, because we also got the MDR, which is their modulation delay reverb. So it's just those three effects, and then again it has like you're choosing between a selection of modulation. They had all the modulations on there, and then, you know, a handful of different delays and a handful of different reverbs, which is again much more suited if you have like one drive pedal that you definitely want to bring along, and then you can just throw these things in afterwards, which are especially good if you don't use a lot of modulation, delay or reverb and you just want something that's going to be one solution and in a really small pedal format. Again, like, these are, they're functional, they're definitely functional, yeah. Effects, they're not gonna blow you away, but if you use a touch of these in the case of the modulation, the MDR, if you're just using those a little bit and they're not sort of something you rely on a lot, it's a £100 unit and it sounded great, and it's it fits in the front of your gig bag, it's super small.
I think the thing where these kind of will find their niche is, you know how back in the day when we were doing the GAC podcast, people always used to say, what's the alternative to an M5? And there kind of wasn't an alternative to a Line 6 M5 in terms of nothing that sounded as good and for that money. It's kind of where these sit. Because it's not like... Go on.
I was going to say, these do a slightly different job because they can do more than one sound at once. And that was always the
thing
with the
M5. I suppose so.
M5
yeah.
was good because it was loads of different effects.
Yeah.
But it could only do one at once.
It could only do one at once.
Well, you could always plug a MIDI switch into the M5.
Yeah, but you can't have more than one of the processors on at once.
Oh, no, I see what you're saying. You can't have more than one. Yeah. Sorry.
The thing, personally, I think these are built for someone who's like, oh, I've got a huge pedal board and I've got, you know, a twin or whatever, but I've got to go to a gig on the train, or I've got to go do a quick session, or not a session, go and do a quick afternoon gig, but I've got to take the tube there. This would be great because you just pop this in the gig bag and it will do everything that your pedal board is doing. It won't do it as well, but it's £129 and it will literally go in the front pocket of the gig bag.
So. I just think it's always worth having a backup. Do you know what I mean?
Like, absolutely.
Just having it in the, like you say, just having it with you and just something like that.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, I'm just spending a bit of time on the Valentin website while we're talking about it. And they make a product which is basically the Vox Amplug.
Right.
But it looks like maybe even has a tuner built in as well. So I think it's supposed to be called the Rush Head, but it's only got one H. So it's either Russ Head or Rush Head.
Yeah.
Get yourself one of them bloody Rush Heads.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, they've
absolute
got...
Absolute Rush Head, mate.
Absolute Rush Head. Or is it Russ Head? Maybe it's a signature Russ, model from Mr. Russ Head. They've got some...
Russell Head.
Mr. Russell Head. They've got a ton of weird stuff on there.
One of the other pedals that we got through was the Dapper Looper Mini. Now, this comes in like their fly rig format, which isn't an especial advantage over a normal looper, because, of course, you know, most loopers come in a single pedal format anyway. But what I like about it is it gives you three. Now, listener, you know, like, what I mean by like a fly rig format, where it's like where it's really slim and long, and because it has like three individual foot. Oh, Jay Cross.
No, nothing.
And because it has three separate pedals that are separated into the record play, the stop, and a phrase switch.
You don't even know what that does.
I don't know what that does. What does that do?
You're talk about the benefits and you literally don't even know.
I assume the phrase switch will be, you just like, you can have something pre-recorded in it, kick it in, like a sampler, basically.
I'm not sure it is that. I think it will be more like Let me have a look.
It's got 8 savable loop memories.
Oh, look at that. Isn't that weird? Fine. Isn't that weird? It's almost like I know what I'm talking about.
Do you know what I thought it might be? I thought it might be like on the DL4 where you could do half time, double time, or reverse. Yeah.
I mean, I'm amazed they didn't do that, because that is still where the DL4 reigns king, is that it's got that real simple looping function that allows you to do half speed, reverse. Super quick.
The Ditto X2 has that.
Yes, but the Ditto X2 doesn't go over 4 buttons, so it's still not as easy, because you have to choose between the second button being stop or half speed and reverse, which is super annoying. I'm surprised Line 6 haven't just gone, we should put a looper. I guess the thing is, DL4, how much DL4 now? 199?
Something like that.
200 quid.
They're always like 200 and something quid.
So, you know, so you might as well just buy a DL4, I guess. They're absolutely massive, and they run on the world's most ridiculous power supply.
PX2 crew.
Actually, it might have changed from a PX2.
You can use just a one spot.
That's right.
Can DL4. You? Yeah, it's fine.
Because they're 1200 milliamps.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was why you couldn't use the Boss PSA 240.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But yeah, you could use a one spot.
Yeah, right. We actually have some other stuff in the mailbag, but I feel that we should maybe move on to some news now.
There's loads of news.
There's not that much news, but we're going to move on to some news. Here's the news. News. First up, Mark.
Hello.
Think this is slightly old news. This was certainly circulated in our Facebook group maybe over a week ago, but we have to give this some.
We talked about it. We talked about it on Patreon last week.
Very briefly. We definitely deserve some main episode airtime. Fender have released a limited edition. Is it limited edition?
Yeah, it's
FSR.
Yeah. So,
FSR.
Fender, good. Baja Telly, good. Shell Pink, good. All the things have come together. I mean, not that Fender and Baja Telly were ever split up in the first place, but they've now added to the ingredients list of making the best guitar of all time, the Shell Pink finish.
Oh, it's very, very good.
It's really good. So, there's not really that much to report here, apart from...
They ruined it with a black scratch plate.
No, it looks way better. No,
I agree.
It's all about the black guard.
A mint plate. Shell Pink guitar. Oh yeah, cream.
You guys are so weird. Like, it's a blackguard telly,
but it's pink. Yeah.
But it doesn't have to be this time. It's a pink one.
Yeah, but why would you want it to? It's so weird.
You want to make it very good, so they should have done it on the 60s, not the 50s. So you got the white binding and a rosewood neck, and then it would have been great.
Listen, Joe. The thing you've got to bear in mind when you're saying I'm sat right in front of you. Like, I came up with this guitar, which is why it's Europe exclusive.
You're wearing a Shell Pink jumper.
I am wearing a pink jumper. Yeah. and so because when we were specking up this guitar, I was like, well, I quite want one of these. That's why we went with the black guard. And of course you go 50s rather than 60s. The 50s is a better guitar.
The 60s Baja doesn't exist to me. It never has existed.
The 50s is a better guitar.
Right.
It needs a solid rosewood neck. That's what it needs.
I mean, that would be great. That's a 60s Baja.
So that's okay, is it? Solid rosewood.
Yeah.
What it comes down to is I'm buying one of these because I've been wanting a Baja for a long time. I've just sold a guitar that I made a bit of money on, and I'm going to buy one of these, and it's going to be wicked. And you're all going to be jealous because there's a limited number. And
do you want me to sign it for you?
No.
Because I'll sign it for you. It's fine.
So I'm going to have one and you're not. So kiss my face.
I think you should put an anodized gold plate on it, actually.
No. So
what's wrong with you guys?
Matty, so this is something that we've been talking about a bit offline, but I'm getting really close to putting an order for a custom shop. Yeah, I think a 59 P bass.
Yeah.
And I'm going to get Shell Pink, and I'm thinking anodized gold plate.
Yeah.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
The more I see gold and pink, the more I just think it's just
mugs.
It's great.
I think mugs.
Cream and pink is the best combination.
No.
I have 3 pink guitars, 2 of which have cream hardware, and it is the absolute
cream hardware.
Best. Well, you know. Yeah. I put a cream bridge on it. But that Charvel, just with all like the cream, well, sort of off-white pickups. But the Les Paul is cream and looks way better. And it's got a black back. I don't like that. Black and pink don't work.
Yeah,
black and pink
does work.
Black, Matt, think about Bret Hart, yeah? Pink and black.
Oh, for goodness sake.
The best two colours, the best wrestler of all time, is now the best guitar of all time.
This is an excellent precursor for how bad and how heated the Balaguer co-op build guitar podcast is.
I mean, it's going to be pink and black, so...
It's going to be pink and cream, mate.
No, no. Anyway, so...
Lake Placid Orange.
Lake Placid Orange. So to sum it up, Baja Telly, Shell Pink, it's the best. I'm going to get one. I'm going to be the best. You guys are all losers and do one.
Matt Knight, talk to me about these new Frederick Effects pedals in the best looking pedal chassis I have ever seen.
Yeah, so we actually saw these, or we saw a very early version at the, and I always forget the name,
Kempton, the London International Guitar Show.
The one in London that's sort of in the south of London. And we spoke to the chap, I unfortunately forget his name, and he had the fuzz, the Dresden Synth Fuzz Mark II there in this kind of wedged shape effects pedal chassis. His name is Tim. It reminds me of another pedal company that did a very, very similar shape, and the name I forget. But it's not the first
Jim
time.
Jim Dunlop.
Jim. It actually looks like the Octavio, doesn't it?
Yeah,
exactly. The Dunlop one thin object. Yeah, exactly.
It's a wedge of cheese.
So they've got the Dresden Synth Fuzz Mark II, which is a very synthy sounding octave. Well, two synthy sounding octave fuzzes that run in parallel, one upper, one lower, which is very, very cool. But it now features a clean blend, so you don't lose all of your signal as soon as you turn it on. The Utility Percolator Mark II,
we've got the original Utility Percolator.
Oh,
from them.
Oh, right, great. We should AB him, because that pedal was wicked. We did a video on that quite a while ago now, and it was a great pedal. But they've added a ring modulation circuit for octave and sputtery overtones.
That's
actually, this guy
cool.
was... Tim was super knowledgeable on the original harmonic percolator as well. Jay, we asked him, and he said basically no one's got...
Yeah, because we were talking about the fact that I've got a harmonic percolator... And he said, I don't know much about it. Like, I can't find any info on it. Like, I think it's an original. And he just went, no, it's not. I was like, oh, really? And he went, no, it's not. You've got one of the, like, you've got one of the reissues, blah, 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 blah. And yeah, he was super lovely. And yeah, it was really cool to talk to him about, a pedal that I own and really don't know a huge amount about.
But it does sound wicked. And then the last one is, and I guess I'm going to pronounce this right, Verzerer is a highly tweakable recreation of East Germany's only distortion effect, the Bohm Trickverser.
This was what he was showing us when we were there talking with him.
He has basically been sourcing old weird fuzz pedals from, and well, just like kind of weird Russian stuff, and then he found this East German distortion effect, and he's managed to track down the original transistors and diodes used and then recreated the circuit.
Oh my god, that's so awesome. He's actually sending us these three. They're gonna be nice.
Oh, amazing.
Next week,
so. Amazing. So yeah, I'm super interested to see, because I always see on eBay someone's always selling, you see it more on the synth side of things, but these weird like old Russian synthesizers from like the 70s onwards, because at that point they basically couldn't have anything made anywhere else in the world, so they had to make their own, and they're all super weird and they all use like crazy components, so they have like, they're not they're only influenced in looks by the originals, and they tend to have like a really unique character. So I'd definitely be interested to try that, especially if he's recreated the circuit as close to the original as possible.
Extremely cool. Yeah, I'll be well excited to see those, and we'll report back more on them when we've actually heard them. Jay Cross, I thought we'd heard the last of Fender for new releases for a little while.
Okay,
but no, it is. It's time for. It's time for you guys to start talking about at least something that was announced at NAMM the alternate reality power caster.
Yeah, so the alternate reality is essentially the parallel universe series, but made in Mexico this time around. So there was a bunch, the whole range was shown at NAMM, and in a similar way to what happened with the parallel universe, the guitars were all coming out month by month.
Yeah. Oh, it's such a good idea. I'm so glad they're doing them in Mexico, because that was the only thing with the parallel universe. They were expensive. Really fun, but like 1300, 1500 mm-hmm. quid, that's quite a commitment. Whereas like if it's a Mexican thing and it's like 700-800 pounds, yeah. It's like, yeah.
I also think it was kind of testing the waters, like how weird can you push it?
Yeah.
And it's less of a risk if you start with the higher price point, you know, because so the Powercaster is the first of the alternate reality series. Really, really weird new body shape, kind of offset. It's kind of like a Jaguar Jazzmaster, kind of, but a bit more
with a
bit more offset,
a bit more Toronado-y vibes.
Yeah, I guess so.
A bit more of a sort of cutaway on the lower horn. Sort of almost SGE lower horn and then Jazz Mastery upper horn.
I guess so. But it's a really, really weird mashup of different things. So it's got a P90 in the neck and an atomic humbucker in the bridge.
Classic. And I think is that the
Tom DeLonge one?
No, I think wasn't it developed for probably like the Toronado or something?
I don't know.
I think it was, but I seem to remember. Let me do some research. Okay,
you do some research, Mark. And it's got a roasted maple neck, but a Palferro board, which is a really, really weird combination.
That is a weird.
It would have
been better, because from the photos, because Palferro is much lighter
than
usually rosewood, it sort of looks like it's one piece, and then you realise that it's not. And it's sort of, considering they're already making, like, roasted maple, caramelized maple necks in Mexico for things like the Charvel, you would have thought they would have just done exactly the same.
Yeah, you would have thought that in this reality. However, in an alternate reality, things are very different, Matt. And the other thing that's really cool about this is it's 24 3/4-inch scale length, so kind of medium scale.
Ooh, yeah, that's super cool. Which
is, I'm in. Which I think it looks wicked.
I think it looks fantastic. It looks really, really cool. Three kind of kooky colors as well. So there's surf green, sorry, white opal and three color sunburst, you know, that kooky color three color sunburst.
Nick Reinhardt posted about him having one of these, and he said he had an early model where it had a different name on the headstock.
Yes.
Are you aware of that?
I am aware of that.
What was the name?
Fastback is the name that was on
I think I prefer
Nick's one.
That name.
I like Powercaster.
I mean, Powercaster sounds fantastic.
Fastback.
So yeah, Nick got like, because I saw one of the prototypes ages ago, and that's one of the ones that Nick's got. Is that? But yeah, it just decided on. A lot of them had different names. It was just, you know, when they're in prototype, when they're in the prototype stage, things often have kind of weird names. So yeah, that's where
if it was me, I would take the neck pickup out and just have it as a single humbucker.
Oh, that would actually look really cool.
I think it would look great. Yeah.
So Fender Toronado did indeed have the atomic humbucker.
And
as far as I'm aware, that is the first appearance of that pickup.
Oh right. Okay.
Because I believe so that was in 1998, and I can't think of a guitar before that had them. So there we go.
I really want one of those Toronados. I always thought they were really, really cool guitars.
Yeah, but this. Well, why don't you get a Powercaster, Matty? It's basically the same thing.
Yeah, I guess so. Maybe I will. Maybe they should do it in pink.
Now, podcast favourites. We've actually already mentioned them once already on this podcast. Balaguer, because we're going to be building a Balaguer on a later episode. We've got to do that. When have we got to do that? We've got to do that in April now, Matt, because you're away now.
Yeah. It also just made me think that maybe they should start. Do they have Build-A-Bear workshops in the USJ? Because maybe they should just start a shop called Build a Balaguer, and then you can literally just go in, record your own voice messages that play through the guitar.
My favourite book is magazines.
So Balaguer, this is much...
He's gone.
Yeah, this isn't much to report on because we don't have an awful lot of information, but Balaguer have announced that they're going to be making an affordable standard series. And the word affordable is ridiculous when it comes to Balaguer because they offer essentially semi-custom-built guitars for as little as $1,300, which I already think of as being pretty affordable. But yeah, they're going to be
in this day and age.
Well, yeah, in this, yeah,
have you seen the exchange rate?
Yeah, true. But anyway, they're going to be releasing like a standard range of guitars, which look like they're kind of pretty, like, kind of safe-ish, functional, tasteful versions of the guitars that they offer. They're going to be offering these with prices starting at $699.
Stop saying USDs.
That's what it is.
Say dollars.
Yeah, well, we could be talking about there are dollars used all over the world.
USDs.
Yeah, you wouldn't say GBPs, would you?
Well, why not?
Excuse me, how much is that sandwich? Here's 5 GBPs.
Well, maybe I'll start. That sounds pretty good. Okay. But anyway, it will be really exciting to see like an even more affordable version of the Balaguer's come out that, like, you know, all the information that they've pointed out about this, about it undergoing a 46-point quality control check. I mean, I don't know if 46 is a lot or not a lot, really. That just sounds like a sort of a number that people use. But these are
one,
gonna be...
check that the E string is in tune. 2, check that the A string is in tune. 3, check that the D string is in tune. 4, turn the volume knob. 5, check that the G string is in tune.
Okay, I'm never
strings are never in tune.
I'm gonna cut you off there. Anyway, Matt Knight, tell me about talk
you
to
you didn't need to cut him off. He stopped.
Yeah, he had stopped anyway. Matt, talk to me about T-Rex.
So T-Rex Engineering, the company that disappeared for literally an entire day. A Danish newspaper reported that T-Rex had gone bankrupt, and everyone in the kind of guitar pedal world was sort of relatively shocked. A company that had obviously had some great innovations, made some great pedals over the last 20 years, maybe? 1996, I think, the first Mudhoney came out. And then obviously just kind of disappeared, had gone bankrupt, no real reason why. And then the next day they were like, don't worry, we've bought the company back.
Guess who's back?
Back again. T-Rex is back. Tell a friend.
Yeah, so
T-Rex back. T-Rex back.
It could be an incredible marketing activity.
Oh, it's a great idea. They've definitely become very topical all of a sudden. I also think in that day you probably had quite a few replicator sales because...
Well, also they in their press release they announced that they were carrying on with a reduced staff. So
yeah,
if it's
true.
I'm not sure this is great marketing.
Funny gag.
I'm not sure it was
what a great way to sort of market sacking people.
Yeah. I think the thing is things like a pedal that actually runs on a cassette tape and then no one makes that cassette tape, so you have to manufacture your own and everything else to go with it isn't cheap. And for a relatively small company, I'm sure that was probably quite hard on the business. And as they say, basically, the original founders have bought the company back. They've scaled back the staff because they couldn't really decide which way they wanted the company to go. And they're obviously trying to go much more down maybe that kind of vintage route and creating something sort of far more interesting in the pedal world rather than trying to just mass manufacture a whole bunch of stuff they already do. So it'd definitely be interesting to see where they go next, because obviously they did debut the Binson Echo Rec clone last year, and it was one of the big things they were talking about at NAMM, and they hadn't updated the blog since April last year. Unfortunately, I don't know whether maybe they're going to be like too late to the party with that now that Strymon have come out with the Volante. You know, trying to do something that's very, very Binson-esque. But it will certainly be interesting to see where the company goes over the next couple of years, I guess.
I really should just buy a replicator.
Yeah.
They're very cool. I think actually the Junior is probably the better one to buy. But
yeah, but they're cheaper.
No, that's true. I mean, but I always thought the Mudhoney was such a great distortion pedal. Mudhoney 2 actually was really nice with the extra...
I just love the...
The Bug series was always a bit...
Yeah, they were tone bug. They were not
the tone
great.
Bug. They were not great. But the kind of the big box ones were really nice.
What was their delay called? The replay? The little blue one?
Replicate.
No, they did a...
They did a whole bunch of weird screen printed ones,
yeah,
didn't they?
Yeah, they were cool. They were really good, really well built. But I really should
the
get
creamer,
a replicator.
That was one, wasn't it?
Creamer was good. And do you remember they did that really good bass drive, the Bass Juice?
Yeah, Bass Juice was like a go-to for years when the only bass drive you could buy was the Boss ODB3.
Yeah.
And then suddenly there was the Bass Juice, which was about four times the money, but people were like...
It sounded great, though. It was cool and vintage, and it was in a cool cream chassis. I liked everything about that pedal.
Yeah, classy.
So, you know the replicator?
Yeah.
How does tape delay work? Do I need to buy another tape? Is it going to fill up like when I'm recording off of the radio?
Is it going to fill up
like when I'm recording off the radio?
He's trying to get that top 40 down so he can listen to all the songs.
He needs to pick up some broadcasting tips from Chris Evans.
But I don't ever need to replace the tape, right?
I mean, the tape will run out eventually.
It will not run out.
It will degrade.
It will deteriorate,
which is probably what you want, though.
Right, yeah, that sounds cool.
But you don't just keep recording to it. It's not like a C90 or whatever where you've got to, like, you know, put the charts on there or whatever. You record over the top of what you've recorded.
Yeah.
I was looking at the website. I was like, oh, they only make the modular one now. That's crazy. But then I've just realised that that's under their studio delay section, and under the regular delay section is the pedal version.
Very cool.
I mean, again, I think they've made some cool pedals, maybe some potentially wrong choices down the line, releasing a 700 euro Eurorack module that runs on actual tape delay is cool, but I don't think that many people are going to buy those. But they made some cool octave pedals, actually. The Octavus and the Quint Machine were two really, really cool octave pedal. Well, the Octavus was a high octave, low octave with a boost, and the Quint Machine was two fifths, a fifth below and a fifth above, which is quite cool. But then they had the Soulmates, which were kind of never really took off. They were like the more expensive fly rig, and then they had a Wah, Wah was
there's
like
a Soulmate
300...
at GAC at the moment. It's massive.
Yeah, they're ridiculous. What and was I think the Wah was like 600 quid.
What was the valve-driven reverb that they did in
the
pedal?
Alberta.
No, that wasn't valve. That wasn't valve-driven.
It was called.
Wasn't
the...
it?
No.
No, the Alberta was a blue drive pedal. The reverb was.
I feel like it was in a quiz.
Are you sure it's not the Cole Martin headspace?
No. There's a T-Rex valve.
I think we talked about it in one of the quizzes recently. The roommate.
Roommate.
Yeah.
That was really good. I remember that sounding excellent.
Because they were one of the when I started working at GAC, I remember them as one of the first like boutique.
Yeah,
definitely.
I remember we got them in and was like, ooh, Denmark.
Yeah,
they were like, oh, the Mud Honey. Wow, and a different drive pedal that isn't a
because actually
or
for
a
while
muff.
It was the what delay pedal was it that they did that basically every
the replicator
David Gilmour, was it? It was the replicator. Yeah,
replica.
Yeah.
T-Rex replica. Was the one that everyone wanted.
It's the brown one, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I wanted them for a while. It was great.
Yeah.
And then they had the Reptile as well, was the slightly later one.
Yeah, and then they also had a really good... They had like a snakeskin vibe pedal, which I think they just...
Hasn't been in the range for ages.
But I remember that being really good. That was one of the best...
Yeah,
uni vibes. But when I
and
was
of course all their power supplies as well. You know, the fuel tank stuff I think was pretty game changing at the time.
Yeah,
it was one of the first readily available, power supply power units. Supplies. Which I don't know if you know this about me, but I'm a big fan of the old power supplies. Let me tell you.
Well, T-Rex are back, so hopefully there'll be more power supply innovation coming up.
I hope so. Nikola Tesla, bring it on.
They are indeed. Well, that is it. For us here on the regular episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast, we'll be continuing over on the Patreon episode of the podcast, where for as little as $1 a month, you can support the podcast. $1 a month gets you the regular episode ad-free and early. $5 a month gets you the Patreon episode and all the mini-series stuff. And all I can hear is echo.
Matt, yeah, it's echoing quite a lot. Can you, like, move away from the mic for a sec while Joe does...
I'm really far. I'm much further. I'm leaning, like, back because I'm not talking to the microphone. So I'll just dip it down when I'm not talking.
Okay.
I'll do this again. Well, that's it for us here on the regular episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast. We'll be continuing over on the Patreon episode, where from as little as $1 a month, you can support the podcast. $1 a month gets you the regular episode ad-free and early. $5 a month gets you the Patreon episode and the new Hall of Fame series. And $10 a month makes you one of our executive producers and gets your name read out in one breath by me. Go on, help me out.
And Roy Chris, Jake Chandler, Robert Cousins, Rob Cole, Scott Everton, Duncan Everton, Andy Cooper, Ross Edwards, Nate Dagle, Stephen Edge, Rob Gunn, Matt Roberts, Dave Lee, Emmy J. Swinger, Juan Carrier, Aaron Trappin, Blake Whelan, Andrew Gunny, Jamie Kemp, Jake Gray, Matt Mellory, Martin Clift, Scott Kennedy, Christopher Lawson, Aaron Sands, Robin Smith, Derek Rich, Chris Connors, Rob Nordrich, Duncan Watson, Ed Rainey, Stephen Rothman, Didi McGuff, Michael McRae, Carlos Rutter, Andy McKenzie, Brad Ridge, Brad Trump, Scott O'Brien, Laurie Johnson, AJ Deacon, Sayers, Matthew King, Stuart Tate, Scott Kane, Sean Arnold, Mr. Morgan,
what were we doing with our lives?
I still made it.
What is going on?
What are you doing?
Why are you just going bop, bop, bop?
Oh, my goodness.
Okay, right, fine. We made it through. God. All right, we're there.
Oh, good Lord.
Okay, it's fine. We've made it. All right. That's it for us.
Okay, thank
podcast.
You. Bye-bye.
We'll see you next week.
Bye.